Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Adventurer podcast, where explorers and adventurers tell their stories. Coming up.
The harder I worked, the luckier I'd get. And I think that's true in some instances, but also sometimes failure is completely inevitable. You know, doesn't matter how hard you work, the mountain doesn't give a damn, and COVID doesn't give a damn about all of our plans. And it's being able to reframe failure and think, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I use this experience to come back stronger? So after a bit of sulking, you know, you take responsibility, and then did another year of training, another year of fundraising, and went back to Everest in 2015. And this time we were on the same team, same format. And then we were in the Khumbu Icefall, which is just above base camp, moving to camp one for the first time. And the earthquake hit Nepal. So we were in the icefall about 6,000 meters when the ground started shaking. We got hit by a big powder avalanche.
I'm John Horsfall, and on this weekly podcast, we talk to adventurers and explorers from around the world who have made remarkable and daring journeys in recent years. From Everest climbers to polar explorers, world record holders, and many more. I hope this podcast sparks ideas and inspires you to explore and go on an adventure of your own. But before we start, if you're enjoying the show, sign up to our monthly newsletter at zebraadventures.com, where I'll show you behind the scenes, I do giveaways, and offering you the opportunity to come on an adventure. My next guest is an adventurer and charity ambassador from England. On this episode, we are talking about the back-to-back disasters that happened to him on Mount Everest, what went wrong, and the fallout from it. He has completed numerous endurance challenges, raising money for mental health charities. And on today's podcast, we are talking about mental health. He is no stranger to adversity, suffering epilepsy and bullying in early life, and he now uses this as motivation for his outdoor challenges and now helps others to overcome theirs. I am delighted to introduce Alex Stanningforth to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Alex, great to have you on the show. You are no stranger to adversity and challenges. And I think it's great that you use these life challenges through your outdoor adventures. Probably the best place to start is with how you got into these adventures.
Yeah, so to take you back, it, like most of these things, tends to start in childhood. I had a very normal start in life, if you can call it that way. My parents gave me a great start. I was brought up near Chester. And I had a pretty normal start in life. But when I was about 9 years old, everything kind of changed because I had a mild form of epilepsy, which was quite a terrifying thing for a young person to go through at such an important age. Now, that itself was only very mild, fortunately, was brought under control, but led to lots of different challenges. I was relentlessly bullied all the way through school, which just shattered my confidence and left me feeling worthless. Suffering with anxiety and panic attacks, you know, where even having a seizure in McDonald's meant that just the smell of fast food could trigger a panic attack for many years. So that made school pretty challenging. And I hated sport at school. You know, I hated PE, very far cry from where I am now. And most weirdly of all, I've had a stammer ever since I've been able to speak. I mean, I've never known life without having a stammer, which is pretty unusual when I'm now a motivational speaker for a living. But that kind of sums up really my journey, is that it's all been about overcoming adversity and using physical outdoor challenges to overcome personal challenges, you know, never really settling for base camp, never following the beaten track, and I guess trying to make the biggest difference that I can along the way. So I think finding the outdoors by chance at about 14 years old is really that changing that was the kind of pivot point for me. that really set me on a different direction in life. And 10 years later, I'm very lucky that now I can combine this passion for personal challenge with inspiring others to overcome theirs. As a speaker, as an author of 2 books, I'm a brand ambassador for a few charities and organizations, and started a charity last year based on mental health, trying to restore mental health through outdoor experiences. So it's been a very unusual journey. You know, from the early challenges, it's important to say that it's not like I've completely risen above them. My stamina's still very much there. I can go and speak to 500 people, in a presentation, and then not be able to ask for a train ticket on the way home. Or I've smashed up phones at home just for the frustration of being unable to say my own name. Mental health has probably been my biggest challenge of all. And I think that's the important message, is that we all have those peaks and troughs. The most important thing is just to keep on going.
So when did you get the idea for Everest?
When did I get the idea? It was actually about 14 years old, not long after I kind of found this escape of the outdoors. And as always, aiming for the big things. I'm not exactly a very strategic, start small. But it really was all inspired by that adversity. And although it wasn't much compared to what some people go through at that age, at the time, I was invited hill walking in the Lake District from a friend, and something I'd never really done before. My parents weren't particularly outdoors minded. My dad was a runner, but besides that, we didn't do anything massive. And on that walk in the Lake District, one May 2010, I just remember asking the question to myself, where's Mount Everest? And I think being in the hills has just inspired me to dream bigger than ever before, just to question all these limits and these doubts that we put on ourselves. And I came home, and of course, being a millennial, I went on Google, and I just became captivated by the idea of climbing the world's highest peak. I found other people like me that had done it, and especially those with kind of a normal background. You know, they didn't have wealthy parents just to pay for the trip, because that's often the biggest barrier. They'd managed to find the funds and make it possible. And I think knowing other people had done it kind of gives you permission to try. I think at that age, I just kind of committed to myself that one day I was going to climb Everest. And it just seemed to me the ultimate way to really fight back. And I guess I never imagined at that point that actually 4 years later, I'd be at Everest Base Camp about to make my first attempt.
Good. And so you're at Mount Everest Base Camp. What happened?
Well, I've got caught up in the two biggest disasters in Everest history in 2 consecutive years. It didn't go to plan. These things rarely do. That's pretty much the same as life. And we got to base camp after 3 weeks of trekking in. I mean, I was with a team led by the same climbing instructor who'd first taught me rock climbing in the lakes. And we spent 3 weeks walking from Lukla. Then a day before we arrived, a huge avalanche in the icefall killed 16 climbing Sherpas. So it all went pear-shaped. We had to pack up and go home, obviously, without stepping a single foot on the mountain. So I guess my immediate reaction at 18 and the kind of naivety was that the harder I worked, the luckier I'd get. And I think that's true in some instances, but also sometimes failure is completely inevitable. You know, doesn't matter how hard you work, the mountain doesn't give a damn, and COVID doesn't give a damn about all of our plans. And it's being able to reframe failure and think, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I use this experience to come back stronger? So after a bit of sulking, you know, you take responsibility, and then did another year of training, another year of fundraising, and went back to Everest in 2015. And this time we were on the same team, same format. And then we were in the Khumbu Icefall, which is just above base camp, moving to camp one for the first time. And the earthquake hit Nepal. So we were in the icefall about 6,000 meters when the ground started shaking. We got hit by a big powder avalanche. We were trapped on the mountain for 2 days. Base camp down below was pretty much wiped out by a much bigger avalanche triggered by the earthquake. And how to describe it really. We were stuck at camp one for 2 days with aftershocks and avalanches, not knowing that actually we were in the safest place of all, you know, and that we'd lost 3 of our team down at base camp, along with 21 people in total. So yeah, I think had we not left base camp that morning, I probably wouldn't be speaking to you now. So that having that experience at 19 kind of puts a lot of things in perspective. So obviously after that, we eventually got helicoptered out of Camp 1 and headed back to Kathmandu.
God, wow. And at such a young age to have that happen, not once, but twice. What were your initial feelings when you got back to the UK from it?
I think the first time round, obviously, was very different. You know, dreams can be replaced, lives can't, you know, and you've got to keep that in perspective. Second time round, it was more about the kind of trauma, the guilt, that why them, you know, why not me? This shouldn't have happened. You know, base camp's meant to be the safest place. So I guess there was, from a mental health perspective, yeah, I think I was really suffering with the trauma for a long time. And I just threw myself into fundraising for the victims, doing some more challenges. And I decided if I couldn't climb Everest, I was going to cycle it. So there's a challenge known as Everesting, where you cycle up and down a hill to do 29,000 feet within 24 hours to raise money for people in Nepal. I wrote my first book, Icefall, which really helped me to kind of process it all. And then speaking, you know, kind of fell into motivational speaking, which was never part of the plan, but it's the most rewarding thing in the world. But I think at the time, I was just running away from it. I wasn't really dealing with it because nobody else can really understand. You know, the only friend that could really understand was those that had been on the trip with me who didn't really want to talk about it. And then also a friend who'd been in the army, you know, he'd seen a lot worse. So even today, to be honest, it's still kind of there. You know, you still never forget that moment of thinking, this is it, you know. And by the end of that year, I kind of really hit a low trough, probably the lowest I'd ever been, you know, and just that sense of loss of everything, loss of purpose that we spoke about before. And I think that loss of purpose, you know, is really hard to pick myself up from. It got to the point when running has always kind of kept me doing something, you know, kind of gave me some feeling. But I remember entering a half marathon and just bailing halfway around. I just quit. I stopped to watch and just walked home. And that was when I kind of realized I had to accept that, you know, I needed some help. I couldn't manage this on my own. I think it was when all those other things like the fundraising and the writing had kind of gone. You know, I had to face up to it. But I think the underlying feeling was that I've got to make the biggest difference I can. You know, I owe it to the guys, and hopefully that I've been able to achieve that.
Did you feel that the sort of purpose of Everest was the idea of Everest was very much about conquering the demons from a young age?
I think so, yeah. I think at a young age, it was about proving myself wrong and proving the bullies wrong. But then actually I realized that that was never going to get me anywhere. It's the same with many goals in life. If we're always chasing that next thing, success, then we're never content because we always want the next thing. And I think I kind of realized then I had nothing left to prove anymore because I'd already got to Everest, which was itself was probably the hardest challenge. And I wasn't really being true to myself. And therefore, we're never going to be happy. And I think the next big pivot point in the journey was actually in 2016 when I went back, this time trying to climb Chowa Yu in Tibet, which is the sixth highest peak in the world. I think that was more to put Everest to bed, but also at the time it was actually for training for making a third attempt at Everest. That was my best chance of getting over 8,000 meters and getting some altitude experience because I'd only been to 6,500 on Barunsi. And obviously on Everest we didn't get higher than Camp 1. So that trip went a lot better. There was no disasters. I got to 7,200 meters, Camp 1. Camp 2. And then it was the altitude that as always has always got me. I've always been rubbish at altitude. I remember that night in the tent at 7,000 meters thinking to myself, you know, why am I really here? What difference am I making? On Everest, we saw our tents buried under a foot of rock and ice and snow. You know, and I was thinking, what would I have left behind had I been in that tent? And I think that was when I was able to let go of Everest and actually realize that it wasn't just about the top. And I kind of lost the draw. It wasn't about fear. It wasn't, you know, it was just acceptance. And I think that's kind of where that sent me to where I am today.
And where are you in terms of your your sort of challenges today?
Well, since that, it inspired me to kind of stay close to home for challenges and adventure. I mean, I've always loved running. That's probably been the only sport I'm marginally good at or built for. I'm useless in the gym and everything else. And I've always enjoyed running at a kind of a competing level, you know, up to probably marathons, probably my strongest distance. So I'd had to sacrifice all that for Everest because the injury risk and everything else. And I just enjoyed that just to keep me ticking over. But I was inspired by Elise Downing, who ran around the coast of the UK the year before. And I loved how she kind of carried people on the journey. You know, people were joining her along the way in various parts of the country. And it was just a really good way to raise awareness and to see what we have here in our home soil. Something that I'd always taken for granted. So I came up with the idea of a whole new challenge called Climb the UK, which was climbing to the highest points of all 100 counties in the UK. And that was a kind of human-powered 5,000-mile journey, cycling, walking, running, kayaking in 72 days. And that was all raising money for Young Minds, a mental health charity. And I threw myself into that, and it kind of became my new Everest. And I realized then that that was what it was all about. It was about the journey. And that was the hardest thing I'd done. And it was the only thing where I'd ever actually achieved what I'd set out to do. So that gave me a really big confidence boost. And from then on, I spent a year basically training for a marathon because I was writing my second book, Another Peak, and didn't really have time to go off for months and months doing a big challenge. So I just ran and tried to bring my times down for, you know, a sub-3 marathon. And then since then, I mean, 2019, I moved up in the Lake District. So that kind of took up my energy for the year. Just did a lot of fell running, a lot of races. I've done the odd spontaneous thing. I mean, the end of 2017, I tried to cycle from home to Edinburgh in one hit, which from Chester originally was about 310 miles. So I kind of like the sporadic, spontaneous endurance stuff. But in terms of big projects, I was overdue like a big challenge. So last year in August, I ran the National Three Peaks. So most of us have probably heard of the National Three Peaks, Ben Nevis, Scafell Pike and Snowdon. But normally you would drive between them in 24 hours. And I did that when I was 16. That was probably my biggest challenge at the time before Everest and after Mont Blanc and everything else. I decided to run the entire distance between them. So 452 miles in 9.5 days. So about 70 marathons. And I was trying to break the fastest time, which I didn't do. But that was my focus for last year. And I think definitely for the foreseeable, ultra running is my thing. I've always loved endurance and those really long, painful things. But I think that's where I want to focus my energy now, is close to home and just trying to do things differently. I'm never really interested in the conventional challenges. That's been a really rewarding change, really.
What was that Three Peaks challenge like? Because you're over 9 days. Were you self-supported or were you doing it sort of solo and just sort of relying on, I'd say, sort of credit card touring types?
Originally on the National Three Peaks run, I had planned to be self-supported, but I realised that I'd never ran an ultra before. Well, I'd never raced an ultra before. I'd done one 46-miler in training, and then a lot of long runs, but that was it. So that was a bit ambitious. You know, I was being a bit over-ambitious there. So I kind of changed the plan, and I had bits of support. I had friends and cars, and my friend Rich was there for the first 3 days, and various people at similar stages. There was definitely a lot of challenge when I was on my own, and I had planned and trained to have everything on me in a rucksack and then sending things ahead. But with the mileage and everything else, it just didn't work. So I did have a kind of various support cars, but it was self-sufficient as much as it could be. You know, I didn't have like a dedicated vehicle all the way. I was still having to faff around in hotels and B&Bs, picking up my own food, picking up my own supplies. And I think when you're doing sort of nearly 50 miles a day on tarmac, you kind of really need that. And I wouldn't have got there without that, for sure.
For people listening and watching, mental health is a huge part of what you do. And because it sort of sometimes creeps up on people without them even realizing. You know, someone who you see on a day-to-day, every day, looks like they're doing well, but behind sort of closed doors or behind the sort of exterior, deep down, there are always issues that sort of creep up on people. How does mental health sort of affect you? And for people listening, you know, how can it be spotted?
Well, that person that you describe, you know, that kind of looks like they're okay was me and still is me. I guess it all triggers back from anxiety when I was younger and the panic attacks with epilepsy. But in terms of a more kind of diagnosed problem, I first had depression when I was about 16. That actually happened when I was injured. I couldn't run. And losing my outlet, my escape, suddenly just completely threw me. Combined with a few other things, I think I'd always been very prone to it because being a perfectionist and very high achieving mindset. And I think I was always very vulnerable to low mood and low self-worth. And then, as always, running kind of got me back out of it, having challenges, having purpose. And I think I've had sort of peaks and troughs since then, but it got a bit more challenging the second, you know, the second time around I got injured. And again, I was about 16, and that was when the eating disorder started. And that made things a whole lot more complicated because I've always loved food, and obviously as a runner, as an athlete, you need a lot of it. But then that became my coping mechanism, that became my only control, and that quickly got out of hand, led to an eating disorder. You know, that was like bulimia and binge eating disorder. And that's kind of been with me ever since. I mean, eight, nine years later, it's never gone away. You just learn to deal with it. You know, I've never seen food in the same way again. And there's definitely a risk for athletes that we need to be more aware of now is this whole culture of earning calories and training. And it's quite risky because I fell into that. Now, I was able to recover from that, but ultimately I wasn't really managing it very well. I had episodes where I struggled. Sometimes I was fine. Another bout of depression after Everest when everything went wrong, understandably. And that was when I went for help. You know, I realized that this is something I couldn't manage on my own. And I guess that was when it got so bad that, you know, I needed medication. But I think I've always believed in kind of purpose, not pills. And it didn't work for me. You know, before that could really help, I'd been able to almost get myself out of it by finding a new purpose, finding a new challenge. And I'm not saying that it's not for everybody. You know, people have to find what works for them. But what really inspired the Climb the UK challenge was the fact that it took me longer to get an appointment for my mental health than it did to cycle around the UK. And that kind of highlighted just the lack of support available. You know, I was always able to kind of pick myself up through the outdoors. But as for today, I mean, at the end of 2018, after that year of again, training and trying to race and knock my times down over marathon, I'd fallen into the trap of under-eating and overtraining. And I guess that eating disorder still manifests itself now. You know, I still have to be very careful. I got injured at the end of that year. Couldn't run again. A few other things were going on. And yeah, then I had a really kind of bad year, in and out of therapy and things. And yeah, I mean, I'm very open about it, as you can tell, because I think I've realized that everybody is dealing with something. And if my story helps other people to put their hand up first, I know that has a positive multiplier effect. You know, I think I'm in a really good place now. Some of the help I've had has been fantastic, and I'm very grateful for that. And I still have to work on that. You know, I'm still my own therapist now. I still have to watch out for the triggers and take action. But I'm very grateful that I can run and stay active, and now have a much healthier relationship with food. But I think starting the charity has all been about trying to help other people find those tools, because people could see me speaking on the stage very confidently and looking fine, when really they don't know what's going on behind. And one of the guys that inspired me to open up was Tom Fairbrother, who set up a project called Train Brave. And I saw that he'd had such a positive response to speaking openly that I had nothing to be afraid of, really.
I think what I love about your story is how you've used something negative in your life and moved it into such a positive sort of community and sort of passion that you have?
I guess that's been my default response from a young age, from that first walk in the lakes. It's like that realization that we don't always get to choose our challenges, we just choose how we respond to them. And that happens by default now, and whether it's on an expedition or just day-to-day life, just an attitude we have to take. And same with COVID. I mean, I sat down at the start of lockdown and said, okay, what can I do in this time to make a difference? Because I can't control this and I can't control that. But yeah, adversity is the best teacher. And there's the old quote by Bruce Lee, you know, obstacles are opportunity in disguise. Because if we focus on the problem, we just make it bigger.
So with your projects, what are you doing now in lockdown?
Well, interesting times. Here we go again. As I said before, I think the first time around in lockdown was sunny and warm and people really appreciated nature. But to give a bit of background on the charity, Mind Over the Mountains is basically trying to combine the outdoors and hill walking with coaching. We combine hill walking and coaching and mindfulness and counselling and inspirational speakers into a safe, confidential space for people to walk and talk, and not to try and fix, but just to build the resilience and the self-help skills that they need. And we were doing walks and rambles and residentials, obviously, until the summer we had to cancel all those because of all the rules. So we really kind of scratched our heads together as to how we could still help people when so many people have just lost hope. They just need that support. So we adapted our programs in the end of last year to work with smaller group sizes, just doing kind of a one day ramble rather than like a weekend event. And that worked amazingly well. You know, really was able to reach sort of six new areas and a lot of people. But then the second lockdown came again and we had to cancel our events. And we had 40 programs planned for this year. We've had to have to cancel the first few, and we're hoping we can get back to them as soon as possible. But what we've been doing as a charity in the meantime is a lot of virtual things. So we have like a virtual gathering space where people can come and be a part of an online group guided by a coach just to share their struggles, their joys, and just get some mindfulness. And I've just started our base camp sessions as well. So we're inspiring outdoors people and adventurers and athletes just to share what they've learned from their adventures and combine that with some outdoor skills from our team. So we're kind of inspiring and educating people just to keep them connected whilst we can't get together in our normal events. And as always, you know, we have bursaries so people can you know, access our work for free if they're having hardship or financial circumstances. So that's taken up a lot of my energy in the charity, but got a great team behind it. And my Three Peaks raised £11,000 for us, so hopefully can sustain a lot of our work for the year ahead. And then personally, speaking has obviously all gone virtual. I've not spoken to a live audience since March last year, and that's going to probably last a bit longer. So enjoying the challenge of speaking to companies virtually and just grateful to have that. And I guess from an adventure point of view, it took me a long time to get back to normal after the Three Peaks. Turns out it's not a good idea running 50 miles on tarmac. So just easing myself back into running and keeping me sane during lockdown. And we've just started a new virtual challenge called the Lockdown Lap, because I think people have lost races, they've lost goals. So I thought, well, what can we do to keep you people motivated to get the benefits of being outside, even when it's dark and wet and cold? So this Lockdown Lap was an idea that people can virtually log their miles and we can try and get around the coast of the UK, which is 11,000 miles. We did that in 2 weeks with sort of 200 odd people. So we're now going around the world. And then personally, you know, I'm just building up my mileage again for the next challenge in the summer.
Oh, amazing. Well, I have to say, I'm a big fan and absolutely love what you do. I think it's absolutely amazing and truly inspiring. Well, there's a part of the show where we ask the same five questions to each guest each week. With the first being, on your trips, what's the one item or gadget that you always take on your trips or expeditions?
It depends. You know, it can be a local run in the hills, or it could be an expedition to the Himalayas. But it probably sounds very obvious, but I'd always have my phone because I love music, and it really is kind of the soundtrack to my life. I've always got music playing when I'm running, when I'm in the hills. Having music can just take me to a different place and help me to think and inspire me and motivate me and give me that energy. So as long as I've got access to music on my phone or a player, then that could be my reset if I need to just escape.
Okay, very nice. What is your favorite adventure or travel book?
Well, I mean, I was very lucky. Bear Grylls did endorse my first book, Icefall, so I was so chuffed about that. But his book, Mud, Sweat and Tears, came to me at a really important part of the journey, because it was, when I mentioned before, when I was in a really low trough, I was injured, I was depressed, I couldn't run. I couldn't run for nearly a year, and I was told I may never train properly again, let alone train for Everest. And my friend Rich recommended that book, and I'm so grateful, because it told about the story about Bear Grylls breaking his back just 18 months before he climbed Everest at 23. And that book gave me the hope that I needed just to see the light, to keep moving. And it's also a great book, really engaging.
So you were off for a year. What was that after?
That was nearly a year. So that was just after Mont Blanc, before Everest. So Everest was 2014. This was the end of 2012. So I lost nearly.
I thought you said you were injured.
Yeah, I was injured for nearly a year before Everest. So, you know, I couldn't do any running anyway for quite a while. So that was a big setback. And whilst I had this Everest goal in mind.
Was that what, shin splints or broken ankle or?
Interestingly, it was like shin splints, but it was actually it was a growth spurt. So I had this undiagnosed shin pain, and every scan and test in the book you can have, and it was basically a growth spurt causing inflammation. But yeah, it taught me a lot, and it was a really tough time because I couldn't escape with that. And I've had various injuries since, like most athletes, and just a lot more careful nowadays.
All right. Why are adventures important to you?
I think challenges make life worthwhile. I think staying in our comfort zones, doing the same old, just kills our potential. You know, and quite literally, if we'd stayed at base camp on Everest, it probably would have killed us. I think for me, it just makes life rich, worthwhile. We see things in a different light. You realise what's important. The list could go on, really.
That's very true. What about your favourite quote?
I've got lots and lots of them.
You can reel them off.
Well, I mean, I can't claim any of my own because I pinch them off the internet. But one of the most important ones to me, I think, came to me from one of my inspirations, Becky Bellworthy, who climbed Everest when she was 20. A few years before me, and she passed on a quote, which is, "The greatest suffering brings the greatest successes." And I actually wrote it on my wall in big pen in front of my bed. So every day I woke up and saw it. And that was like my motivation for Everest, was actually realizing this was worthwhile. And then if I could throw in a second one, probably "It Always Seems Impossible Until It's Done" by Nelson Mandela. And that was so true. You know, sometimes it feels so impossible, but before you know it, you're there. Yeah, I could go on and on, really.
No, they're good quotes. Very good indeed. People listening are always keen to travel and go on these sort of grand adventures. What's the one thing you would recommend for people wanting to go on an adventure like you?
Well, interestingly, today I got an advert in the Post about flying to Europe this summer, which is a bit optimistic considering the current lockdown, but we've got to keep thinking forwards, haven't we? Because I'm sure all of us are missing travel. I mean, obviously my adventures have been in the Himalayas, in Nepal, which are quite far flung, they're quite big, and I'm so lucky to have been over there. But I think sometimes if the goal's so big, it can be quite daunting. I think you've just got to sometimes take those small steps, you know, not necessarily throw yourself in the deep end. So for the short term as well, it might not be bad advice just to stay in the UK, go to a completely different part of the UK or your home country, wherever that could be. And I think you really get an appreciation for what we have here as well. And some places, the UK just blew me away. But I think if that doesn't appeal, you know, if they do want to go on a big grand adventure, then obviously all the fundraising and everything, there's a lot of things to commit, but I think you've just got to set the date. Until you set a date, put something in the calendar, life gets in the way. And it doesn't become a must, it becomes a want. So I think realistically, you know, be realistic, you know, but then set a date and scare yourself a little bit. And just there's a little bit of fear there in terms of being out of your comfort zone, because that's the most rewarding thing.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite quotes was, if it scares you and excites you at the same time, then it's probably worth doing.
Yeah, and if it doesn't scare you, it's not big enough. But yeah, I think it might be more realistic for the short term to do stuff in the UK, but that's not a bad thing.
No, I think international travel is probably very much out the window for the next 6 months.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I'm just very grateful to be in the lakes and have mountains to run up and just put things back in perspective.
Yeah, I'm very jealous of where you are at the moment. The lakes is probably... the lakes are probably one of the most spectacular places in the UK, so although I'm very grateful to be down here, I have to say the lakes is just stunning, so I'm slightly envious of you up there.
I mean, I think I moved here for that reason, just the hills give me hope, and being able to run in the hills while I'm not working, just to have that life balance for me is kind of what I needed mentally as well, just to really reset myself, and it's been kind of a therapy as well. After Everest, I came up here for a while, and just spending time in the lakes really helped me to overcome that. And just every day, you know, it never gets boring. Even after the Himalayas, it's magical.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing now, and how can people follow you and your adventures for the future?
At the moment, like everybody else, I'm working at home. There's still some plans for the summer, you know, I'm just keeping those in mind. Another attempt at a fastest known time. And then until then, the best way to follow me is on social media. I'm on all the main channels, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. If anybody has any questions or wants to ask any advice, my inbox is always open. Visit my website, alexstanleythorpe.com. And then when I come up with some more challenges or virtual things, it'd be great to have people involved.
So I'm sure everyone's wondering what adventures lie ahead. What's next?
Nothing confirmed. I've got a few ideas in the pipeline, and after the Three Peaks, my body wasn't having anything for a while, and that's perfectly fine. But I think I've got a running based record attempt, which is going to be something very different to what I've done before. Quite sort of short and sharp. I'm looking into that at the moment. I think it'll be in the UK for the next, you know, at least for the next sort of 2 years, but this one will hopefully be this summer. I'm definitely back in challenge mode now and looking for the next target, but I've never doubted myself as much as the Three Peaks, so I'm going to have to really push the bar now, and I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely amazing. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. You have a truly remarkable story to tell and really inspiring to many. And I just want to say thank you.
You know, it's a pleasure, John, and it's great to have the chance to share the journey. Hopefully, give some people, you know, a bit of inspiration as well. So, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Next time on the Modern Adventurer podcast.
Always like 100K wins. It was no visibility. We're roped together. I didn't see Tarka usually, unless it was a break. I would just see a rope heading into white. It was just a white box around me. I didn't know if I was going up, down, left, right. You felt sick all the time. No one could hear you cry, which was a bonus because I did a lot of that. But yeah, so it was really alien being in this white world. When he'd fall down a crevasse, because he was usually in the front, I would just feel the rope pull me to the floor and I'd just face plant the floor. And then I know it's for me to now get him out of the crevasse. That was how you knew one was coming. Quite often we'd lay in a tent and hear the avalanche coming down and just look at each other and hope it's not taking us out. So that was quite stressful.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the podcast on YouTube now, and don't forget to sign up for our monthly newsletter at zebraadventures.com. I hope to see you next time for another fascinating tale of adventure. But till then, have a great day and happy adventures.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.